Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, blessed souls. Well, Don Gross certainly applies once again as we now connect to the higher inner frequency of Soul Class number 406, Secular by Design, Part 19. We plan out things, and yet Hashem, Creator, plans it in another way that we have to readjust and reconfigure to the divine plan. I am 9 minutes, about 9 minutes or 10 minutes, maybe even 11 minutes late into the broadcast due to the fact that I was attending a communal celebration of a new member of the nation of Israel, Avraham Tzvi Ben Ron Hirschkop, and with his wife of valor, Mina, and the Kaplan family here in Crown Heights. So we wish them well, and that young Avraham Tzvi, 8 days old, Bien Harash, he grew up to Torah Chupa Maisim Tovim. Today's broadcast, without further ado, bless those, and we were supposed to have the writer of this seminar work, Secular by Design, a philosophy of Noah Headlaws and Observances, Alan W. Cecil, come on live. Unfortunately, perhaps he came on and he was waiting for me, so I publicly apologize to Alan for being so tardy. It just the bris was supposed to start at 8:30, and I didn't come back until now. So again, Alan, I'm publicly apologizing to you, and I will privately apologize to you after the program. With that being said, blessed souls, we're turning now to Secular by Design, Part 1 Overview, and in last week's humble presentation here, we were discussing from the book of Genesis the verse, and the Creator called for the day, for light day, and for darkness night, and it was evening and day, and it was night and morning one day. Let's see, maybe this is Alan. Hold on. Okay, sorry about it. Let's just get that off the screen here. Okay. Dealing with a lot of glitches today, blessed souls. So with that being said, blessed souls, we're going to go further now on page 46. And again, if you want to learn more about what we discussed last week, you'd have to go to Soul Class. I guess it would be Secular by Design, Part 19. And that would have been show, I think, 403 or 402. So Alan continued to write about the fact of the matter, literally and figuratively, is that the Israelite sages had some inside information, which we can say with assertion, I, being a member of the Israelite Jewish people, had some expertise into the nature of the creation. And coming live right now on with our show is the author of this wonderful book, Secular by Design, A Philosophy of Noah Headlaws and Observances, Alan W. Cecil. Alan, before you say anything, I want to publicly apologize to you. We had scheduled to go on at 9 o'clock. I was delayed because there was a delay in the celebration of young Avraham Tzvi Hirschkop, who entered the covenant of Abraham this morning. Please forgive me. I ask you forgiveness publicly for calling you early, and you're coming on better late than ever, but please forgive me.
No problem.
How are you doing today?
I'm feeling good. I feel bad we started the program late, but again, a communal participation is such a mitzvah, something that Jewish people strive to do, especially in light of the fact that you're probably aware of it by now. There was a horrible tragedy in the Har Nof section of Jerusalem this morning, where I don't know how many perpetrators were consciously and evilly stabbed a Rav, the so to speak, the dean of a young men's seminary. Such cowardly acts certainly have to be, hopefully a proper response will be ensuing. I don't know what if they caught the people that perpetrated it, but as Rabbi Eliezer Gelsak mentioned in a short terse note that he sent to me to share with others, we have to get rid of this fallacy that there is a Palestinian people. There's just Arab terrorists. Those who want to live with us in peace, and those who want to live with us, unfortunately, the opposite of peace. Would you like to make any commentary on this?
Well, I just saw it on the news, but you know, again, this is the purpose of why I wrote the book is we've got to get the nations to understand that this kind of behavior is not acceptable. You know, in any sort of organized religion, and there's just so many factors involved. But you know, when you get, I don't know, it's really hard. You can't really explain this kind of behavior. Why do people do it? Why are people making excuses for them? And why do people blame it? Yeah, it's not Israel's fault. It's not anyone else's fault but their own.
Yeah, I mean, also we know that there was this young American, Peter, I forgot his last name, who was killed by ISIS. And the crazy thing is he was siding with the rebel. He was helping giving aid to the, I don't think it was military aid. I think he was involved in medical assistance, not that he was a doctor. He was helping the rebels and the Syrians against the horrendous and bloodthirsty Assad regime, and the members of ISIS, I guess, questioned his dedication, even though he himself became an Islam. Hey, I thought a person was supposed to be cherished among the Islamic people if they become a Muslim. Well, it looks like they have their own infighting, just like you have in any factions. Unfortunately, it takes place in Judaic realms. I know it's historically the Christians have been fighting among themselves. The thing is, Alan, let's cut to the chase. The Noahide commandments are about upholding standards that give a certain protection of inalienable rights that God told Noah and his descendants, and to this day, all the Gentile peoples, and also, for that matter of fact, Jewish people, that we have to be respectful of life. I mean, we're deviating from the problem content, but the idea that there should not be premeditated murder taking place, and it is, and is not met with ramifications of such behavior, just contributes to more chaos in this world. Your take on these matters?
Yes, and I don't even think John Adams of Get Smart can get rid of this kind of chaos. We've really got to push this message. And yeah, and it, one of the things that I know you don't like, you know, do it on the show, but since I'm a Noahide, I will. One of the big things about the Noahide code is that it prohibits organized religion. And that's where so much of this madness comes from, this organized religious fervor that, you know, oh, we've got to kill people for God sort of
right.
thinking. And that's one of the big things that we've got to combat.
True, I hear you. So, Alan, I think we're going to lower the fire a little bit and get back to the program content, but... you know, the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, may his merits protect us, once said, when something hurts, we cry out and we scream out, and I guess that's my form of crying out and screaming out, and hopefully people who are listening to the live version or hear the archive version will do their own research into the matter, and to realize historically speaking, going back 1,000 years, 2,000 years, 3,000 years, there is no such thing as a Palestinian land. Yes, there are Arabs. Arabs are talked about in the Torah. Written in oral tradition. But with that being said, the Israelite sages, going back in time to the beginning of our people, had some expert inside information, as I continue to read from Alan's book, on how the universe was formed. Understood that this information, although illuminating to a scholar, was unnecessary to the layperson. All that was needed to be known was that God had created the universe and everything in it. Quote, in the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth. Quote, end of quote. Really all one really know, there are more important matters to learn instead of dwelling on the mysteries of creation, mysteries that modern science is still at a loss to explain. It is clear that the rabbinic interpretation is much closer to what modern science explains than Christian theological interpretation. It is always the Christian theological interpretation used by the atheist to dismiss the Torah. And I guess, Alan, because the majority of the world are observant of Christianity, which I don't know of any teaching where the majority of the world has to be Jewish. It's just a matter of our own nation embracing these teachings and then for the Gentiles of the world to embrace their code and as they see fit to implement it into their society. And yet when people take that approach of attacking the biblical depiction of creation based on the Christian theological interpretation, it's an obfuscation and it puts a mushroom cloud in the eyes of the masses to deter them from learning what's the difference between what a person is supposed to be doing and what a person is not supposed to be doing. Any comments on this?
Well, it's like we were saying before, you know, so many people dwell on, you know, arguing about, well, you know, how was the earth created? What, you know, how old is the universe? Instead of concentrating on what they're supposed to be doing right now, what is right and wrong. It just seems that they, you know, you're being told that, oh, the Bible's wrong because, it's against science. You know, they're arguing about things that, and it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference to our lives today. It really, you know, for someone today, does it really matter if you believe that the world is 6,000 years old or if the universe was created 15 billion years ago? You know, what the Torah is about: correct actions, not correct beliefs. And this is one of the points that both the Christians, the atheists, all miss.
True. And even that being said, I'd just like to share with you a point. I don't know if you're aware of this. This is from the teaching of the Arizal, who in fact was very much was considered to be a master. The inner dimensions of Torah, what they call the mystical part, which I don't like that term, mysticism, anyway, makes it too ethereal and not tangible. I mean, people believe in physics. They're using wireless technology, so they must believe in the technology that empowered it. Arizal mentioned that for every teaching in Torah, there can be 600,000 perspectives based on the 600,000 root souls who were there to receive the Torah at Mount Sinai. So even when we talk about a belief in what a person believes in, we can have a common consensus, like, for instance, there is a God, but we, as long as we keep it within, hopefully, in the realm of someone who is not a supreme being, who is not human, we can have a very fertile conversation. But again, it shouldn't be to the extent of us being oblivious to what's wrong and what's right. And continuing that line in Alan's book, the secular atheists say that the Bible is anti-science and should be taught in schools. The problem is not that the Torah is anti-intellectual, anti-science. The problem is that secular atheists are ignorant of rabbinical commentary and rabbinical interpretation of the Torah. I mean, that's very true. And many people who are involved in rabbinic commentary, rabbinic interpretation, like say Rambam was a medical doctor, Ramban was a doctor, Robert Rave was an electrical engineer before he got more involved in a more revealed way in Jewish education. Rav Soloveitchik of the Yeshiva University system, I believe, had a PhD in Semitic languages or linguistics. And one of the things that he promoted was the idea of Torah Umada, Torah and science. Not Torah against science or science against Torah, but fusing the two together, because the Torah can empower people to have thoughts about how to go into that realm where there have not been excavated out those teachings. Would say how to, for instance, how to make a laptop. I mean, we didn't need the Torah to tell us how to do it, but the Torah speaks about things as electricity and flow of energy. However, secular Gentile thinkers, secular Jewish thinkers, have come up with the wisdom through trial and error to come up with this technology, the quantum physicists, the regular physicists. And therefore, it's not a contradiction. It's like telling an anesthesiologist that his approach is antithetical to the surgeon who's going to open up the body of the person, but they're supposed to work hand in hand. Alan, this gap that people are promoting, that Torah is anti-intellectual and anti-science, which flies in the face of the tradition of Torah, which promotes scientific endeavor, which promotes seeking the unknown, because precisely by seeking out the Creator, you're going to find him, whether it be in the Talmudic texts or in creating alternative forms of energy.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at the numbers of Nobel Prize winners in science, in mathematics, it is astounding. I can't remember the exact figure, but somewhere between a quarter and a third of all the Nobel Prize winners in those fields are Jewish. Why is that? Well, it has to do, again, with even people who are not specifically religious. You know,
right.
they have this culture that promotes science, mathematics, you know, that sort of thinking. You know, compared to the numbers of Nobel Prize winners that the so-called Palestinians have produced, which I think is zero, you know, you just have this culture, this way of thinking that is conducive to science and math. So, yeah, there really is not a problem with it.
True. And continue on with your forward, your overview, excuse me, on the overview in part one. As wondrous and advances our technology and our sciences are, the standard model of physics is still incomplete. For all our scientific knowledge, scientists, we're talking about 21st century scientists, not 15th century scientists who were oppressed by the church and other forces about trying to come up with scientific endeavors to further promote human consciousness. 21st century scientists still do not understand what causes the fourth elemental force, gravity, even though, so to speak, Newton, you know, perceived that at a certain level he's giving credit for bringing that discussion more into the realm of scientific consciousness. Yet people accept the fact that gravity exists, but we still don't understand what causes it to work. So if people could humble themselves, Alan, and I speak of myself, but anyone else, to realize there are many aspects of divine teachings as embedded in the DNA of the Torah, whether it be rabbinical or scriptural, whether it be the 613 mitzvahs, the 7 Noahide commandments. There are many parts that I don't understand. My only reaction is okay, I can feel at that moment a little bit of contrition, and sometimes a lot of contrition. The second thing is, well, how do I access these teachings so I'll be a little less ignorant and a little more empowered to understand that there's a knowledge of how to make this place a better world, as opposed to saying, well, maybe it's true or maybe it's not. Your take on these matters.
Yeah, gravity, we've kind of talked about this last week. When you get down to quantum physics, the little particles that make up the protons and neutrons, they have no mass. And scientists have been struggling to figure out, how do these particles have mass? Where does gravity come from? I know we're about to get into the CERN part. We might want to leave that for next week.
Okay.
About the Hydra, the big collider. There's a story, I think I sent it to you last week, that they finally admitted that particle, the Higgs boson particle last week that they discovered last year, and all the atheists and secularists were just so excited. Ah, we found the God particle. Well, now they're saying, oops, our bad, it's not the God particle.
True. Alan, we're going to conclude now, and again, I apologize again for coming on so late, but I would like to ask, could you give some advice or bring out a practical point for our listeners who are listening live or will eventually hear this on the archive version, to bring out some sort of practical application for one of the 7 Noahide commandments, how today they could sort of integrate it into their daily lifestyle and not feel they're going to be overwhelmed, or not feel like they're going to be perceived as someone drooling from the mouth about their enthusiasm about instruction from Torah?
Well, there's so many things again. You know, understanding that when you're trying to, if you're spending your time trying to figure out how old the earth is, you sort of miss the practical application. If you read the opening of Genesis and look at, you know, how Abraham treated people, you know, his kindness and how he invited people into his team, that you have to really be able to put into your lifestyle. Don't worry so much about how old the earth is or how old the universe is. Try to think about doing good here and now, especially with the events that have happened in Jerusalem the past day or two. You know, I think that's a important thing to think about.
Thank you, Alan. And with that being said, Bessels, we're going to end today's program, a little truncated version, but I think it was spiritually, nutritionally, and ethically dense in the positive sense. We're going to end up with our normal ending segue music of Brother David Dome from England, who will help us get back home to remind us our Tzelem Elohim is no dream, our divine image will help us get off in scrimmage. And before someone wants to raise the flag that I am the judge, or I am the light, or I am the knowledge, a simple question is asked by Brother David Dome: who are you to judge? Because the truth of the matter is, as we have from our oral Torah tradition, there is a Dan Yechidi. There's a Dan Yachi, that is the creator. He will do the judging. We have to do the implementing and the improving and the upgrading of the dignity of human beings wherever they may be around the earth. And with that being said, hopefully we'll conclude now in a spirit of Ahava Chad, one love, Goel Chad, one death to Kulana, all of us, Bardachi Shalom, in a peaceful Dachi Noam, in a pleasant way. Take care, everyone. Thank you.
From annoyed to overjoyed.